Welcome back to The Working Week with me, Ben Askins, the show where we take a problem in business and working life and find out exactly what's going on and how we might make things that little bit better. And with summer holidays around the corner, we are today looking at an industry that is becoming so unpopular you wouldn't actually believe it. In fact, it gets some of the highest number of complaints you will ever see. And today we're going to be looking into exactly what is going on there. And I am, of course, talking about airlines. Let's get into it. It's really hard to look at that and say you're not drip pricing. Stop advertising £10 flights to Rome when you know that's not the case. Autocorrect changed his name from Luke to Lukewarm, and he wants €115 to do a name change.
The airlines have realised there's quite a lot with these rules that they don't have to do, and they're not going to get their knuckles wrapped.
So I took a massive airline to court the other day over a refund, and I won. So look, we've gone a long way when it comes to flying. It is actually kind of wild that we only started flying about 120 years ago. It really genuinely is. So in a lot of sense, the industry is completely amazing. And yet somehow, despite that, it is causing more issues and hacking more people off than pretty much any industry at the moment. So to give you an idea of the numbers of how many people are fed up with airlines, 58% of recent flyers have faced travel problems. Like 58%. And the problem with percentages, right, is that we see so many in this day and age that they start to become a little bit meaningless and we don't quite appreciate how bad they are. 58%. You have a customer base where over one in two are hacked off with you. Like in any other sector, in any other business, honestly, I'm actually beyond jealous of the airlines, because in the sectors that I operate in, if you have one in two of your customers hacked off, you do not have a business. So in a lot of ways, I have so much admiration for how these companies are so profitable, because that is absolutely appalling. And it's not just one thing, right? Like in a lot, sometimes you sort of go, look, this is big systemic issue that we can't fix. It's not. It's any number of things. In fact, like if you take the top like 10, I'm not going to list them all, but I'll list the top few. Flights delayed by less than 2 hours, crowding in the airport, delay taking off after boarding the aircraft, long queues at immigration, delays with luggage, ground handling delays, don't know what that is, queues to get to the airport, the list goes on and on. The one for me, by the way, that is that third one, delay taking off after boarding the aircraft. Like, I like to think of myself as a pretty easygoing guy, but if there's one scenario where I can guarantee you will find me absolutely seething is when they are fully aware the plane is going to be delayed and they make you get on anyway, and you just sit there like a lemon for an hour, hour and a half before you even take the flight. And I'm quite a tall guy, right? So especially if I'm on like one of those sort of shorter flights, you're all kind of packed in there like sardines, and it's just absolutely appalling, and it drives me completely up the wall. And I get it, right? I get why people get so annoyed, especially if you're, I don't know, as you know, as my content suggests, a lot of people are not that happy with work, not that happy with who they're working for and all of that. Like if you're not enjoying your job, your summer holidays become that much more important. And if you're sort of sitting there on that 1 week which you've been thinking about all that time to kind of get through those work, which again, it's obviously not what I want, right? Not what anyone should be aiming for. We should all be trying to like make sure that everyone enjoys work more. But if you are in that situation, your summer holidays become so much more important. And if you are just sitting there dealing with problem after problem after problem, and just that complete lack of care that's becoming more and more apparent, it becomes a real problem. And so what I want to do today, right, is I want to look at the things that annoy people the most about airlines. And we're going to look into this from a business perspective to really understand exactly why people are so annoyed and almost how they get away with it a little bit. Because some of the stuff they do is so blatant. It's so like blatant why they do it as well. It's worth looking into the legality of what they're actually doing and why they're doing it, because I think you'll be quite surprised with how much they get away with. And we're going to start with problem number one, paying for seats. This one really hacks people off, and I get it, right? You've gone through the process, you've paid the money for the ticket, and you go to check in, and suddenly you're having to pay for a flight that you kind of thought you'd already paid for, and now you're having to pay simply just to sit next to your partner or the person you're traveling with. And look, the problem with that, right, and look, I get it, there are seats at the front with more legroom. I get whilst those might go for a premium. I genuinely do. I have no problem with that. The issue becomes when you're a family traveling with children, because look, if you are traveling with friends, if you're traveling with your partner, you can survive a flight apart, right? It might not be fun. You might want to sit next to each other, and that's obviously totally fine. But it's not a bigger problem as if you're traveling with young children. And the problem with this is that it's really expensive, and it's incredibly obvious why companies do this. It's a marketing ploy, because in making people pay for seats, which they know most people will have to do, it allows them to advertise these flights. And we've all seen these adverts, £5 to get to Rome and back, or £20 and you can be in Iceland. And it's like, yeah, I get that. And the reason they're doing that is because technically, they are correct, but they know that by the time you've paid for luggage and by the time you've paid for seats and all this sort of stuff, they would have made a lot more money. And that hacks people off because it's incredibly apparent. And it's the family thing I want to talk about most. Firstly, it's because it's causing a huge issue around this new craze called squatting, where people are almost like chancing their arm a little bit by saying, well, look, I've not reserved a seat, but that one looks pretty good, I'm going to sit there. Or families are sort of peer pressuring people who already bought the tickets to say, oh, look, do you mind if you move so I can sit there? And look, this Reddit post summed it up nicely. It said, stop being cheap, pay for your seat. I don't care if you have a baby. Your poor planning, laziness, and lack of consideration shouldn't become an inconvenience for everyone else. And look, I get the sentiment. I've paid for the seat, you haven't, therefore I should be allowed to keep your seat. I totally agree with that. I mean, you could be a bit nicer about it, but, you know, this is the internet we're talking about, so maybe that's a bit optimistic. But, like, this is something the airline's causing. Like, if you pay for a seat, of course you don't want to move to a slightly worse seat or a perceived worse seat. But also, if you're a family and you're not sitting next to your child, you're sort of thinking, well, this is a bit ridiculous. Like, obviously, I'm going to at least ask someone if they'd be willing to move. And that's not particularly fair. So this whole sort of situation is ridiculous, especially, when you start taking a look at the terms and conditions, because that's what we did. I was genuinely curious about this because the Civil Aviation Authority, the CAA, which kind of monitors the safety of airlines, it basically said the seating of children close by their parents or guardians should be the aim of the airline seat allocation. And that's interesting, right? Because that immediately puts it on the airline to say, look, parents and kids need to pretty much be sitting next to each other. And lo and behold, if you take a look at the terms and conditions of some of these airlines, I'm not going to name the airlines because they all do this, right? And it's not fair to pick out one because they all do this as an industry problem, not a specific brand problem. But literally in the T's and C's, it says, for safety reasons, children under the age of 12 must sit beside an accompanying adult, and infants aged 8 to 23 months inclusive must sit on an accompanying adult's lap. It is mandatory for an adult traveling with children under 12 to reserve a seat. It is mandatory, and yet you're charging for it. And this is where it gets interesting, right? This is the big problem in a nutshell. When you read that and then you look at how the airline sets up the pricing, which is this is the price and then, oh, if you want to reserve a seat, here's the cost. It's really hard to look at that and say you're not drip pricing. In fact, I'm going to go on the record. There's no way that is not drip pricing. If that's not drip pricing literally doesn't exist as a thing. And like, if you don't know what it is, drip pricing is basically quite a sneaky practice, which a lot of people have said for years now, especially, for example, the consumer champion, which have been trying to get that outlawed for years to protect consumers and customers. And basically the idea behind it is you're meant to disclose all mandatory fees. That's kind of the idea. You're meant to sort of say, look, all mandatory fees you have to say up front, this is what the cost, and you have to include that in your marketing and all that sort of stuff. But if you have optional extras, that's absolutely fine. And that's what flights set themselves up at. They say, look, here's your core price. And then yes, of course, if you want to reserve a seat and if you want to do all this sort of stuff, then that's absolutely fine. But if your T's and C's say family have to seat together and they have to reserve a seat next to each other, that has to be part of the pricing. Look, I'm not even saying you shouldn't charge for that, right? I'm not saying you should just discount the reserve fee, but you have to include it as part of the main ticket because it feels like an extra, but it's not, because people have to do it. And even like, if you take the family aside, like broadly speaking, most people want to sit with their people that do it. So just make it part of the price and take it out of your marketing collateral. Stop advertising £10 flights to Rome when you know that's not the case. And the second one we're going to cover is luggage. I've called it luggage woes because honestly, it's really hard to categorize it as one problem because, I mean, firstly, like as this video shows, the way people handle baggage, I mean, it's like your dad treating a rental car whilst on holiday. Like they're just absolutely throwing it around left, right and centre. But the thing that kind of adds people really on is how much they're being charged to now just take on even like the most basic thing. And you've ended up with this ridiculous situation where airlines will say, right, this is the maximum size. You get this whole range of luggage that comes out. Everyone then buys one. Then airlines go, actually, we're going to shrink it a little bit more or a little bit more, a little bit more. And it's ended up where it's just on. I mean, in my view, it's just absolutely pathetic. So the BBC has uncovered that budget flyers, so budget flyers, we're talking like the Ryanairs, EasyJets, Wizz Airs of the world, have slashed the size of included carry-on luggage since 2018 by 50%. Half. Ryanair's cuts reported being the steepest with free bag and volume down by 55%. But like, basically what they're doing is there's kind of two aims they've got, right? They want to charge you to take luggage on in the first place, and they want to make extra income by charging people for having oversized luggage. It used to be, I mean, back, you know, way back, it used to be you could have a checked luggage in the hold and a hand luggage, and that was free. Then they started charging for hold luggage. Everyone got those like absolutely ridiculous suitcases, which, you know, everyone then crams them in the locker. And then suddenly now they're being charged for it. And basically you could take like a small rucksack for free. I don't know. So, I mean, at some point, the way it's going, you're going to be like, right, what have you got in your pockets? Oh, you're not allowed without a 20 quid. Like, it's got absolutely ridiculous. And like, again, it's so transparent why they're doing this, right? They know you have to take some luggage on holiday, right? Unless you're going for a day, they know it's you have to take something with you. And they are basically reducing the ways that you can kind of get that on for free, basically. Because they know, like, luggage is actually an extraordinary amount of revenue for these companies now. And they're doing absolutely everything they can to ensure that you don't get your luggage on for free, basically. And it goes back to what I said, right? So, you know, they advertise it as, oh, it's a £40 trip. It's like, it's not, because it's £40 and then it's £44.99 for a 10 kg. You know, I'm going to put this up. It's now about £45 for 10 kgs, which is about $55. And for 10 kgs, that's not very much. That's what you take for like a long weekend. And like for the US, it's similar. And American Airlines, extra bag fees vary depending on the region, but your first bag checked is $35 to $75. And so on and so forth. And there's like absolutely zero wiggle room. You are a few grams over, you get hit with that fine. And like, you can't throw yourself away. Once you're at the airport, you're kind of locked in. And so you can see why people get hacked off, because they just feel like they're being taken for a ride a little bit. And like, you know, there's some quite nasty rumors about like Swissport staff received £1 for every oversized cabin bag they're taking from passengers, which kind of explains why you're getting so little wiggle room. I mean, they've denied this, but like, obviously it's something that it sounds like it possibly could be true. And like, you know, we've seen like Spain has fined 5 different budget airlines for abusive practices, including charging for hand luggage. And you go, abusive practices should not be something that's a phrase used ever for luggage. That's absolutely ridiculous. And look, that fundamentally, the main reason why they keep squeezing you and they keep increasing luggage costs is they keep want to advertise themselves as a cheap airline. Like, that's kind of core to their brand, is they've got to do that. And yet these cheap airlines are quite expensive to run. And so they're like having to like really squeeze their consumer every single possible opportunity to make sure that is the case. And airlines don't help when, like, look, I would respect them a hell of a lot more. And some of them do this, right? If they just came out and said, look, we need the money. Like, I'd respect them so much more. But they don't. They come up with these absolute nonsense reasons in regards to why they're now charging for it. And they always really try and spin it as like, oh, this is for your good, not ours. This is not for me. You know, we don't want to charge. This is for you good. And it's usually two things. It's usually safety, which you sort of go, okay. Or it's punctuality, which is also new. So the chief commercial customer officer for EasyJet said, punctuality is important to our customers. And we know that if they have their bags placed into the hold at the gate due to the limited space on board, this can cause flight delays and it can be frustrating for them too. So basically they're sort of saying, well, look, the reason we charge so much is because we're trying to make it so unreasonable that people don't want luggage in the hold, and they put it down set. And you go, well, hang on, but this is a situation you've caused. Like, don't blame the consumer for trying to get their luggage on the plane. Like, you've set up this ridiculous system, and people try, and so it's just, you just go, oh, just admit it's for money. Like, it's fine. Like, you're a business, you have to make money. But don't do this sort of like, yeah, it's just, you know, this is for your good. Not, I mean, we would let you go on for free, but then everyone would want to bring luggage on for free. It's just like, oh, come off it. Number three, we have a really specific problem, but it seems to annoy a lot of people, is paying for name changes, or even just not being allowed to change your name. So this tweet went viral and it's absolutely hilarious. Mate has been arguing with Ryanair all day because autocorrect changed his name from Luke to Lukewarm on their app, and they want €115 to do a name change on the flight. And like, you can see why he's annoyed. Like, that, like, this is the problem. This is why so many consumers are hacked off with airlines, right? You get this much wiggle room. They have like a really specific process, but the second there's just there could be a little bit of just saying, look, obviously this is a mistake. Obviously I've not like tried to con my mate Lukewarm on pretending to be me. Like, obviously this is a genuine autocorrect. Like, I'll pay an admin fee, like, but it's online, right? So like, what are you paying the admin fee for? But like, this idea that you can't just sort of make basic changes to your name before you've gone the, you know, I get if you kind of got then they've gone through the process a bit more, but like this idea that you can't catch it first and then see the problem and then just to be like, look, I'm really sorry, can I just change the name? But it's just so ridiculous. And like, I've been there, I've made that mistake. And I think with like internet history, just in the sense you've got autocorrect, you've got autofill, like I've done it before, I put my name twice instead of me and my wife. Like, I've done, like, it's incredibly annoying. And the fact that you then can't do that is absolutely ridiculous. And like, basically what gets even more frustrating is like, it allows basic errors supposedly, but then you've got Luke and lukewarm, but not like met. And you go, well, this is just ridiculous. Just if someone vaguely makes a mistake and they ring up in plenty of time, like if they've checked in, okay, look here, if they've checked in and gone through that process, and that, like, I get why you might charge changing name, but if you kind of caught it early on, just let them change their name. It's not that hard. There's no way that affects anything whatsoever. And again, you hear, oh, this is unfair, or like this, it's just like, oh, this is just such nonsense. Like, this is why people are so hacked off with you. When pressed about things like this, an airline said a name change fee is charged in order to discourage and prevent unauthorized online travel agents from screen scraping Ryanair's cheapest fares and reselling them on to unwitting consumers at hugely inflated costs. And it's like, is that happening a lot? Like, is that really happening a lot? Like, you know, they're not Ed Sheeran tickets, right? You're flying to sort of like a place in Europe. Like, I don't quite buy that as a systemic an issue as it is. And if it is a problem, right, there has to be an easier way than just a blanket rule of you can never change. It would make more sense if they said you can never change the name, but you can still change the name just with a small fee. So that doesn't work, does it? When you actually think about it, that doesn't make sense, because if they said, look, once you've bought the ticket, that's it, you can never change the name, that would make sense. I wouldn't say that's a good business practice, but that would make sense for the reason they're saying, which is to prevent screen scraping. But what they're basically saying is like, we're just going to charge you so much money that when you try and flip the ticket, it's going to cost you. It's like, no, hang on, that doesn't make any sense. And again, it goes back to the thing of like, if you're sort of running bullshit marketing stuff saying, look how cheap it is and all that sort of stuff, and that price doesn't work for you, stop selling the tickets. Like, so this is what I mean, like, it just doesn't quite work, that sort of logic, in my opinion. And the next problem we're seeing a lot of is with reimbursements or refunds. I'm going to tell you a story about myself in a sec about how I sued a major airline because of exactly something like this, and I'm going to tell that story in a sec. But basically the idea, and this is what the CAA basically, which is the Civil Aviation Authority, says. It says, if you ever had a claim for compensation or reimbursement rejected by an airline, they should clearly explain why it has been rejected. Where compensation is being claimed, the airline may refer to the causal delay of cancellation as being an extraordinary circumstance, in which case they may be excused from paying compensation. And that extraordinary circumstance seems to be quite a common reason in regards to why people don't get their refund, or they get like offered like weird things. And the problem is right, a lot of airlines seem to set up their refund process deliberately unhelpfully. A lot of automated customer service, a lot of things like that, which basically they sort of know that people get a bit bored. Like, we're all quite lazy ultimately. And like, they know that if they make it that, they're not allowed to make it like completely impossible, but if they make it slightly tricky or slightly of a faff, people aren't going to claim. And this is the thing, like, so for example, if it's more than a certain period of delay, do you know how sometimes they can catch up time? They can always do that, but like, they burn more fuel and it costs them more, but they work out that they might have to refund people, all that sort of stuff. So there's lots of things they do. But basically one of the big issues they have is airlines really do, you struggle to get money off them, basically. If they mess up, it's really hard to get money off them. So I took a massive airline to court the other day over a refund. And I won. And the reason I won is because the reason they rejected my refund was one of the stupidest things I've heard for a long, long time. And basically what happened, and this is why I sort of did it, and like, look, I'm quite lazy on these sort of stuff a lot of the time. Like, I think airlines probably bank on that. Like, I wasn't going to pursue, and then I thought, okay, I'll fill out the form and send it off and see what happens. And then I got the rejection. The justification for the rejection was so moronic, I thought, no, this is actually hacked me off now. I'm actually going to pursue this and throw some resources at this. Because at that point, I was honestly astonished. I was sold a one-stop flight. So I was going somewhere far away. It couldn't make it in one journey. Absolutely fine. You stop at one airport, you have a little bit of a layover, you get on the plane again, and you fly off to the second airport. Pretty straightforward, right? Except this one was a two-stop, not a one-stop. So basically, we flew to the original planned midway point, and then we flew to another airport, which was kind of not disclosed really until the sort of actual day of the flight, and then they flew to the main thing, adding quite a lot of time to the journey. Now, when I pointed this out and said, look, it was meant to be a one-stop, it ended up being a two-stop, they said it wasn't a two-stop, it was still a one-stop, because on the second stop, although we landed and, what's the word, yes, stopped and got off the plane and hung around the airport for a few hours and then got back on the plane, because we got back on the same plane that we were on before, that didn't count as a stop. That was genuinely, that was honestly the reason they rejected my refund. And you just go, you are joking, right? You're not actually going to have a go at this. And like, I kid you not, we'd got off the plane and it wasn't even like you're allowed to leave your luggage on the plane, right? It wasn't even like a sort of like, oh, yeah, I'll get back on an hour. It's like, you had to clear all your stuff away, get off, and then you got back on and you had to do the whole sort of like, you know, here's your seatbelt, here's your life jacket, look at the video for the safety car. Like, we did all of that again and then we took off because we'd stopped. And yet they were sitting there going, yeah, no, that didn't count as a stop. And I just thought, no, they're not having this. And so I issued court proceedings. And like, the problem is, right, like, I can do that. I have the resource. I've got, you know, I've done legal before. I know the sort of dance. And like, it was eminently possible they were always going to settle before court. Like, everyone knew that involved in this process, because what they'd said was absolutely ridiculous. But they were sort of probably banking on me not taking it that far because of the amount it was, etc., etc. And so, lo and behold, like, we'd gathered all the, you know, I had to pay the court fee because I was taking them to court. Like, I'd gathered my evidence, my legal team was kind of put all that together. And then lo and behold, the week before we met to submit evidence, I got a settlement offer, etc., and it was all sort of settled. And it's like, yeah, but come off it, right? Come off it. And I think this is what people hacks people off around this sort of stuff so often. It's like, people make it much harder than it should be. There's just not enough mea culpa. Look, we're really sorry we got it wrong. That's our bad. And like, things go wrong. Like, God, my businesses, things go wrong all the bloody time. But like, you do have to sort of vaguely own up at some point to it. But look, I am not an airline expert. And so for me, I wanted to put some of these questions to someone who genuinely is. And so I was delighted to sit down with Simon Calder, one of the leading travel experts in the UK, to put some of these questions to him.
I was lucky enough to be born just about a mile away from the runway at Gatwick Airport, and in those days you could actually cycle across it. Then, like everybody else in Crawley, ended up working at the airport. I did various things. I cleaned out the British Airways offices. I cleaned out Sir Freddie Laker's planes, and then I started frisking people. That was a job, not a hobby.
Excellent. That wasn't a part-time gig, that one.
Then after that, well, I did various things, engineering outside the travel business, but all I ever wanted to do was go on holiday and pretend to work, and I've been successfully doing that for the last 3 decades. I absolutely recommend it as an employment choice.
How is the airline industry doing at the moment? Because that might explain a lot of the things we're seeing at the moment.
Really good question. Now, of course, it was doing absolutely brilliantly until the end of 2019 and the COVID pandemic, and that absolutely traumatized the industry. And from a working point of view, you suddenly had, from pretty much March 2020 onwards, millions of people worldwide who had got used to the idea that, yep, we've got a pretty unsocial pattern of hours, and we have to work incredibly hard, and we're in the customer front line, and we get all kinds of grief, but look, we've got good, exciting jobs, to when are we going to work again? And crucially, from a workforce point of view, what you had was the fact that airlines, air traffic control organizations, airports just had to let great people go because they literally had no idea when international travel would return. Let me give you a couple of examples from the UK. For a start, in March 2020, EasyJet closed down. This is Britain's most successful budget airline, and for 11 weeks they didn't fly anywhere, finally resumed, but of course that was then very patchy. And to make things even worse, the start of 2021 there was a 19-week ban on anybody travelling abroad, and even if you were somebody who wandered along to an airport, you could be fined for breaking the rules. So impossible times. Loads of great people left the industry. Some of them were nearing the end of their time anyway, but with that you lost huge amounts of expertise, and we saw that when things started coming back 2023. Huge problems at airports, on airlines, couldn't cope. Even last year, big problems. Air traffic control especially badly affected. And look, if you want to get a guaranteed high paying job, if you qualify, then air traffic control is the place to be.
Got you. So basically what happened was, obviously the world stopped, airlines very much stopped, a lot of people were let go. And then when it all opened back up, sort of the airlines went back out to market, said, look, are you guys coming back to work? And a lot of people just sort of went, sorry, I found something else, or I'm done, or whatever it might be. And so a lot of the problems is just a talent shortage, I guess, in a sort of global scale.
Yeah, and this is an industry where experience counts for so much. I mean, I've really enjoyed all the stuff you've been doing on the gig economy, but frankly, if you are operationally tied up in the middle of running an operation in an airport for an airline or whatever in the duty room, you just need to have years and years of experience to call upon. Say, oh yeah, last time there was an air traffic control strike in Marseille, what did we do to work around it? And the people every day finding solutions to that, and there's no substitute for experience. Mm. Yeah, it's fantastic that you've got lots of great young people who are gaining experience every day, but and that's why all these stresses, these absences are playing out, and that's why, you know, this summer, if your flight's only an hour delayed, I'd probably take that as a win.
Wow. I hope they're not putting you in charge of marketing anytime soon. So, I mean, that would explain a lot. So we've got a poll that says 58% of people have had a bad experience recently, and airlines are getting some of the worst customer satisfaction scores ever. It sounds like it's actually a very simple answer, but probably a very complicated solution.
I'm not surprised people get bad scores. However, a couple of things, if I may. First one is, the UK has by far the best aviation industry in the world. We have Europe's biggest budget airline, Ryanair, and up against Britain's biggest budget airline, EasyJet, and they are fighting things out in the UK. Jet2, incredibly well regarded by a lot of people. British Airways, who've had to do amazing things to improve, up against competition from great players like Virgin Atlantic. So we got all these great competitors going on, and you know, we're far better off than people in France, Germany, Spain and so on. So celebrate that fact, and also celebrate the fact that, or be aware of the fact that people in the front line are doing their absolute best to get you to your destination. And I hear so often, you know, somebody is in uniform at an airport, they get it in the neck from people who are unhappy about something which is caused by, you know, ground handlers in Italy.
Yes, I think we can all relate to sort of frontline workers who perhaps certainly are not responsible for any issues that might arise. And I guess it's an interesting point, right, isn't it? Because I think the problem with airlines and the challenge they have from a customer perspective is, best case scenario, you meet customers' expectations. In the sense of, like, no one congratulates you for arriving on time or getting through airport and stuff like that. So they sort of go, well, I'm paying you to do that. I need you to do that. So anything that drops below that is a cause for issues. I'm with you on, actually, I do think the UK airport, I mean, I was in LAX the other day, and I've never seen a stupider airport. I really mean that, in the sense, I'm not talking about the people, obviously, I'm talking about the general layout of how it's set up and the process with which you do a connecting flight. I've just honestly never been in anywhere that makes less sense. So I'm very much with you on the UK and the EU front.
If I may, I'll see your LAX and I'll give you JFK.
Oh, interesting.
I was there last week, and just a 2-hour queue for getting in, because of course President Trump, and this is one reason why things aren't going particularly as well as they might be in the transatlantic aviation market. He said, first day, I want aliens, and I'm afraid, Ben, that's you and me, to be screened and vetted to the maximum possible extent. And my goodness, the men and women of US Customs and Border Protection were doing just that. And it is the world's worst airport.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure we'll both be invited back to the US very soon then, after that little bit. And so I wanted to ask you about refunds, because this is an area where I'm getting a lot of complaints for. And actually, I actually went through this process myself, and I was slightly staggered. Look, transparently, no business likes to return money, right? But airlines, when you stack it up against other industries, say fashion, for example, when it comes to like the ease with which you can do refunds, it's hard to not be cynical and say this feels deliberate, how sort of cumbersome and confusing it is. Where do you stand on airport refund processes? And do you think they put their best foot forward?
After Brexit, the UK copied and pasted the European Air Passenger Rights Rules, known as 261, and they did things like change those nasty euro amounts to pounds sterling, but the rules are pretty much the same, and they apply to any UK or EU airline anywhere in the world, and to all airlines flying from the UK and from European airports. And they basically say, if there is a delay or cancellation, you have to provide a range of options for passengers. That will include, if they decide to abandon their journey, giving them a refund. But actually, more importantly, you have to find a solution for them, getting them to their destination as soon as possible, including buying a flight on a rival carrier, if that's the fastest way to do it. While you are trying to get them to their destination, you also have to provide them with hotels and meals. And the law absolutely stipulates that the airline has to go and find that for you. In practice, like so many of these rights, they're not enforced. So the airline just says, oh, sorry, we can't cope, can't find any hotels. If you do, then go and find one and send us the bill. Mm. And certainly if you've got a robust credit card, that's okay. If you haven't, you are in trouble.
Got you. So they're meant to make the arrangements for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wow, and they know what the rules are. I did not know that.
This has always been the case, or since the rules came into effect a couple of decades ago. But the airlines have realised there's quite a lot with these rules that they don't have to do, and they're not going to get their knuckles wrapped. So,
interesting.
I am constantly lobbying the Civil Aviation Authority, which regulates airlines, to have a go. They basically say we need more powers to get the airlines into line. And you know, every summer, I dare say, this will be the same when we get into the peak season. They will write to the airline saying, by the way, you do know your obligations are these. And of course the airline knows what the obligations are, but they just think, oh, look, Ben's stuck in Corfu, but frankly, if he sleeps on the airport floor, that's actually going to save us money. So we're probably not going to tell him what his rights are. And then if you decide not to travel, getting a refund, I'm going to cut a bit of slack for the airlines with refunds, because they are simply not cut out to be handing back money. And we saw this during COVID when they suddenly turned in from a very efficient, very safe operators of aircraft to refund machines, because, of course, they'd taken in billions of pounds in bookings and they had to give them back. And actually, when that happens, you have, can you believe, the opportunity for fraud to take place? Because I might be working for an airline and I might say, oh, yeah, Mr. Ben Askins was on this particular flight and you owe him 500 quid and I'll send that through. So they have to have lots of checks in place.
I mean,
but generally, they should be pretty swift, and they should be pretty swift with the compensation they owe you if a delay or a cancellation is their fault as well.
And I mean, because I obviously, like, COVID was an exceptional moment, but I guess, like, the sort of businessman in me would push back a little bit and say, like, obviously airlines aren't set up where they're constantly having to refund passengers, but obviously the point would be, if you're constantly having to refund passengers, it's just your product isn't quite at the level that you're pricing at and supposedly delivering on. And I think, so one of the issues I think people said is actually the refund process itself seems to be incredibly cumbersome. Is it them chancing their arm a little bit, sort of saying, okay, we just won't mention it? Is that a bit harsh?
Well, it all depends. And perhaps the worst bit is when you've got that delay of over 3 hours arriving at your destination or a cancellation, you are then entitled to compensation. The assumption is the default that your airline owes you that money. They have to prove why they don't owe you the money, but they many of them, I'm afraid, will, first of all, not tell you you're entitled to compensation. Secondly, if you apply for it, they'll say, oh, sorry, Ben. Yeah, it wasn't us. It was bad weather or air traffic control delays or whatever. When you kind of think, actually, no, because there were loads of engineers messing around with something. And you may well need to go to Money Claim Online to get your money, or to one of the kind of, I suppose, ambulance chasing legal firms that will put in a claim for you in return for about a third of your money.
So one final question. So sort of eternal sort of power, I make you in charge of all airlines and also the CAA. What would you do to kind of improve air travel? And I agree, like, a lot of things are probably out of their control, but if you were in charge, what would you, easy wins that you would pull and do to make things better for everyone?
Oh, thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, you're welcome. So the first you're on probation, though, Simon, so you better do a good job.
First thing I would say is, look, we actually need to convince the public what great service they normally get. Can you believe the two safest airlines in the world are the ones that you and I are most likely to fly on, which is Ryanair and EasyJet, in terms of the number of passengers flown without a fatal accident. Extraordinarily good customer service in, you know, getting everybody where they need to be safely. That's brilliant. And of course, Jet2, British Airways, Virgin Atlantic, Logan Air, all terrific as well. So we're very, very well served. But I would completely start by overturning the ridiculously badly drafted European air passenger rights rules, and I'd make them much more actually in line with the railways, where there's a relationship between the amount of compensation you get and the amount you paid for your trip, and that you get that money whether or not you know, it's the airline's fault. So yeah, if you arrive at your holiday destination 12 hours late, that is extremely regrettable. If it's the airline's fault, then, oh look, 350 quid. If it's not, then you get nothing, maybe the old 50 quid for your insurance. So I would make that, I'd completely revise the rules, and then I would police them. And if airlines were, I think this is a technical term, taking the mick, I would absolutely crack down on them. But honestly, it's going to be a stressful summer, but for the vast majority of us, we will get where we need to be safely and roughly on time. And by the autumn, we'll just have all the happy memories left. We're not quite living in the best of all possible times for aviation. That was in 2019, but it's getting pretty close to that.
Well, that's a note of optimism to finish on. And it sounds like if anyone's out there who's an experienced aviator and looking for a job, it sounds like they'll be welcoming you with open arms. Simon, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
I found that discussion with Simon really interesting. And I think the thing that took away from it, and if I was to kind of point at an issue in regards to why I think airlines are struggling so much, I think Simon told us, right, it's the talent or the lack of it. And obviously, I'm not sort of disparaging people who are working there now, but in regards to like the difference in this, A, the size, and B, the experience of the workforce at airlines. And that's across the board. That's in airports, that's in traffic control, like all these different areas. It makes such a big difference, right? Because obviously, COVID happened, airlines massively reduced workforce because the demand literally wasn't there. And then off the back of that, a lot of people who were perhaps let go or made redundant or even put on furlough and decided to try something else, they quite naturally thought, well, okay, that didn't work out. Maybe I'll try something else, or maybe I'll retire. Or, you know, we saw a lot of, you know, on the older side of the generation, people deciding, look, I've probably had enough. And that's a lot of experience, right? That's a lot of the workforce who just decided, I'm actually just going to retire. And like, I've worked it out. I'll take less, but actually I think, you know, it's the first time I've had a chance to breathe in about 30 years, I'm going to call it. And it doesn't have to take much, you know, it just needs a 10, 15, 20% drop in quality in regards to customer service, in regards to ease with which you get through things, in regards to like, there are a lot of moving parts with planes, aren't there? So you can see why a little bit of lack of experience, it just needs one part to slightly break and it sort of has that ripple effect. So yeah, I think that kind of makes a lot of sense to me. And look, I'm not excusing airlines necessarily, because obviously the price is still there and things like that, that people are still being, you know, having to pay for the price of the ticket and they expect a certain levels of service. So I do understand all of that as well. But it is an explanation. And so I guess in like a sort of word of optimism, as the newer sort of workforce gets more experience, it will get a little bit better. I think Simon sort of said, you know, this summer might be a bit tough, but it will get better. But maybe next summer will be all right and all that sort of stuff. And so maybe we will end on that slight optimism. It's slight optimism, isn't it? Because I'm basically saying this summer could be terrible, but next summer might be slightly better. But like, that does make sense to me. So as ever, please do let me know in the comments. If you do have got this far, please just give it a like and a subscribe. Like, it means a huge amount to the channel and it really does help to show that we're on the right track. And there's a slightly new topic today, so really curious to hear what you think. If there are other industries you want me to look into, please do let me know. If you have any other topics you'd like me to cover, please do just say in the comments. Otherwise, I will see you all next week.